Logos Centrifugal Podcast. I'm Chance Lunsford. I'm also Logos Centrifugal. Maybe you're also Logos Centrifugal. Think about it, and while you're figuring it out, let me introduce today's very special guest. I have with me today the one and only, the miraculous, the other stupendous words that apply here, Beth Martins.
Very good. Now, thank you.
Yeah, thanks, absolutely.
Chance. So great to be here.
It's my pleasure to have you. Now, Beth is a person I ran into because, actually, of a friend of mine named John McNally. And John is an interesting character and a very sharp mind. And he's gone through some stuff in his life that caused him to maybe seek some advice, seek some guidance. And he found it with Beth. And he suggested that we connect with each other, which we did. Connected on Twitter as well, had a phone call at a certain point, and we realized that we see eye to eye on quite a few, let's call them concepts or valuable ideas that you can apply in your life to find more meaning and purpose. And that's sort of what Beth is all about, is helping people to understand themselves better so that they can understand their purpose better so that they can then fulfill it. And that's something that I identify with strongly, and it's a subject very near and dear to my heart. And that's why I invited her on. So with that fairly sparse introduction, Beth, thank you very much for being on the Logos Centrifugal Podcast. Welcome. And why don't you fill in the gaps on who you are and what you do for us?
For sure. Thank you so much. I currently work, I'm here in Winnipeg, Manitoba, in the Bald Ass Prairie of Canada, about 45 minutes from the U.S. border for your American listeners, that I'm not that far from you. And I currently work as a business and purpose coach, working with archetypes. And for me, I was in a place in my life 20 years ago. I was dying of cancer, and it was because I was so far out of alignment with my own reason to be here on this planet. And so it's really come to that point where that's all I really want to do on Earth, is to help people live through their God-given purpose and do the thing, because it's what, you know, I saw from my deathbed. That's actually a really big gift, when you can see what you're going to regret on your deathbed. And so it's my mission to help people not have to get into the pain of that regret, like I did. I got a second chance, and not everybody does. So I also just to fill in more there, that it, you know, the work has evolved. That's the interesting thing about the soul's purpose. It's not just this cut and dried thing that you just get a little, you know, order, and it's clear, and you just follow your instructions and go. That would be like kind of interesting if it were, but it's a constantly evolving thing. So I worked for women for 10 years to help them actually build businesses out of their purpose, so they could do it full time and really be valued for it. And things have evolved to a point now where, and it's actually how you and I met through John McNally, working with the archetype that I call King Heroes, that are like you out there taking the lead, you know, putting yourself out there, putting your views and opinions on the line, being a champion for others. And even despite all your responsibilities that you just shared with me before we started, you're still doing this work. You're still following your purpose. And so it's definitely a passion of mine to support strong men like you to be able to even be more powerful in the world, because that's really what this world needs.
You know, it's very kind of you to say. And on the one hand, I do, you know, I do work very hard, and I do feel driven and compelled to share my message. But on the other hand, you know, I was talking with a friend recently, and it was Kunal. And he was on this podcast, and I said, you know, it's a very courageous move that you made to leave an uncomfortably comfortable career that was well-paying and didn't challenge you, to just jump out on your own and do something that you didn't have any idea if you're going to make it, except for you had a little bit of faith in yourself. And he said, well, it's not that courageous, because, I knew I was dying in the other thing. And so I knew I had to do this. And it's sort of the same for me. It's not any sort of great act of courage or anything. It's so front and center in my life because of the things that I've already been through, that I just feel so strongly compelled to do it, that it's par for the course, sort of. And I think that has to do something with the fact that I'm, you know, a little bit older. I mean, I'm not I'm not old by any means, but I'm also not a teenager or in my early 20s. I'm in my 30s, and I've got a family, I've got kids, I've been through the gamut of self-destruction and made it back out. And so there's just a certain part of me that realizes, well, if I can make it out of the dark hole that I've been in, and I had some hands to help pull me out, I sort of owe it to the world, especially considering the damage I've done to the world, to help repair any of the damage that I see around me. And when I have that sort of mentality, it makes it easy for me to do that. And it sounds like, and from our previous discussion, I know that you feel this way, that sort of deathbed experience really shaped your perspective in that way too. And I wonder, I just chose into doing the sort of out in the world doing this thing just a little over a year ago, and you've been doing this for quite some time, and you talked about how it's evolved and how you started working with men as well. But I wonder, just from your own sort of perspective and your own heart, how the way that you look at it and approach this mission of yours has evolved and changed over the years as you've learned more and grown into the role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're very right. I have to say one thing just to again give you credit, because there's so many people like us that don't do this. Right, that they don't actually take up the calling, they don't choose it, they stay stuck in a fear place, and they don't move forward. So it's a special, I just want to give you special recognition, honestly, to acknowledge that, and also to inspire others to say, yeah, to look at you and go, oh, I can actually do that. Because sometimes until they see an example, it doesn't seem possible. We live in a sea of meaningless crap, right? Like that there's so... it's so uninspiring. And, so the evolution to me, it's really the pinnacle purpose of what we're doing here in the first place is to evolve the soul, to allow ourselves to, of course, to live a good life and to, have everything that you need and good relationships with your family and your wife and your children and all that kind of stuff. But there's always a deeper thing going on, and it pushes up so that if you are willing to listen and feel the actual pain of that, because unfortunately it is a pain, it's not much of a selling feature. It's like, yeah, you can be really in pain with me, but it doesn't leave you alone. So yeah, I didn't want to listen to it. I was willing to just go on in that life. I was vice president of my family's marketing firm. It seemed like the responsible grown-up thing to do, to help out my family, to just be part of that world, to make money for myself, to support my other habits that I had of going to India every year for 8 years in a row and, following my other dreams. It seemed like I kind of had to do this. And then despite my loyalty and despite all my intentions, it kicked me out. It just said, like, do not pass go. You got a stage 4 lymphoma. Don't go back. You're not allowed to go back to your office anymore. That's over. We're going to just level you. Not we're going to, but my life got leveled. It was one of those knock 'em down. I lost absolutely everything. My whole identity was gone. My things were gone. My money was gone. My house was gone. It was just gone. And then there was a point where I had lost everything, but I had the gift of actually seeing who I really am then, when everything is not there, when I can't identify with anything anymore. Who am I? And that became the seed. And I already had a strong spiritual life at that point, but it was deeper. And I chose at that point my calling. I accepted my calling. I no longer rejected what it is that I was being called to do on this planet. And that's slightly misleading, because to say as if, if I could look back 20 years now and I still had no idea what I was going to be doing. But I accepted that I was surrendering to God's will instead of just pushing the world like I thought it should go, and trying to get what I want, following ultimately what actually is our fears. We think of it as desire, but it's fear. And so, at first, after it took me 3 years to recover from cancer, which I did against the odds. I was told I wasn't going to survive it. And what helped me to break that sound barrier to go from being a dying person to being a living person was working with archetypes. That was the big key turner, because at that point I was doing everything right for my health, but I was still dying. For 3 years I did everything right and it wasn't working. So to uncover the mystery, and that's really the beauty of archetypes, it can solve those mysteries. Like, why am I still bumping up against this? Why am I losing my life even though I'm doing everything I'm told to do and even beyond that? You know, that life has those big questions, like, and it's often, why do I keep bumping up against this? So by finding the archetypes that were really out of alignment, one in particular was at that moment in my life. In the meantime, I found a lot more in the studies over the last decades. But at that point, I was able to reclaim enough energy from one archetype whose name is the Rebel in order to actually heal from cancer. And it taught me about energy, taught me how the tendency is to suppress who I am. You know, that's a modus operandi for practically every person on earth, is that for one reason or another, you know, we are taught to suppress. Shut up, I'll give you something to cry about. Oh, you call that black? No, that's white. You call that right or you call that wrong? No, that's right. You know, like just all this, can I swear on your podcast?
Oh yeah. You could let it rip.
All this fuckery, right? It messes with children's minds. That this I remember very, very strongly as a child. It was a lie after lie after lie, but everybody believed the lies. So there's at some point you either have to continue fighting, which I did to a point, but then it was to my detriment because it got me nothing but bad action from the people around me. My family was just one, it was like a war, constant war, me against everybody. So there came a point where I decided, okay, Beth, you know, grow up. This is a really bad part of you. Just stuff it. Stop, you know, now you can start pretending that everything's right, that all of this, you know, business corporate culture that my family's firm served, and I'm not saying they're wrong, but you know, is that whole machine couldn't be, you know, you get pretty close to evil when you're in that world, sorry to say. And then it is such a soul sucker. It has most people in a spell. It's too painful to come out of the spell because you have to actually feel that pain. It's going to change you and it's going to change the way that you believe. So I had to rely on this invention of being deathly sick in order to give myself permission to get out of it. And then once I was to the other side, I was actually truly a different person. I reclaimed energy. I didn't suppress that part of myself nearly to that extent anymore. It freed me up from the act of suppression that is unconscious. Like, nobody knows they're doing it. You don't know you're doing it until you're not doing it. That's a thing. But that free energy was so powerful. It's God energy. It healed me, because I don't know how to heal from cancer. I don't have a hot clue. But now I'm very clear about energy. So at that point, there's no way I was going to get a job. Forget it. And I was definitely not going back into the corporate world. And I decided I was just going to, the first expression of my own personal life was just following my passions for yoga, for meditation, for mantras, singing, for music, for recording CDs, for putting on events, for gathering people, for teaching, for, I'm not a healer, but you know, people have always said my work is healing. So for the better part of 10 years, I did that. And then when I got pregnant and had my son, as you know, having children really totally changes you. It's you cannot see the world the same way. I actually was laying there on my birth bed and I saw this fork in the road. I saw my life go this way and I saw that other road do that. And I'm like, oh, bye. see you.
Yeah.
So this has been an ongoing theme about just growing up. I did have to assume a lot more responsibility at the time. I was a single mother, and I decided to dig in and really find out how to value my life purpose to the next level. Cause I could get by in a different mode, you know, just being kind of like the hippie chick doing whatever I wanted to. I could get by with that, but it wasn't going to be a life sustaining plan for my son. Although his dad is super involved, I always have to say that, not to put his dad down in any way. So then I did a lot of soul searching. It was archetypes to the next level. I always dive in at any kind of lost point in my life. That's where they really come in beautifully handy, when you cannot see the forest for the trees, or you can't see what's in front of you. It's just like this blank canvas. You know you need to take steps, but there's nothing there. And you have no direction, no guidance. You know, God's talking, but not saying anything. I guess, you know what I mean? There's no information there. So turning to archetypes, it's not anything other than you. It's just looking to see what are the patterns, what are the blueprints, what are the ways that you're already wired, that you've been wired by God, and let that speak to you, mostly of the shadow. Actually, the shadow is the part that's so informing, because again, that's where you see the energy being lost, how your life force is going down the drain. And when you make effort to stop that, then that energy returns to you, and it just naturally creates direction. It's never not worked for me. So at that point, what I noticed, because it's always a journey towards wholeness, to go from being all cut up in pieces, fractured up through the various traumas in our lives, to gather up and have that experience of being one with Creator, with everything. And so at that point, what I ended up doing was reclaiming the business side of me. I was like, for the better part of a decade, I was pretending I wasn't in business. Because I demonized it. I said that it was something like evil, and I didn't want to be associated with it. But I was pretending, because I had a business. I was making money. And people would always go to me, you know, Beth, you're so good at. And I wanted them to say to me that I was a good singer, I was a good teacher, I was good, you know, at anything. They would tell me I was a good marketer, or I was good at business. And I'd be like, no,
don't. Choking my water, you
know.
There.
Oh, yeah. Right. So that was, and at that point I just thought, yeah, this is part of me. It's part of, I was born and raised in that business world with my family. They were entrepreneurs. They showed me that kind of freedom that you can have, you can be sovereign. I'm not putting anybody down that has a job, but you can make a lot of your own decisions, and you end up paying for the price and responsibility. That's for sure. But to me, responsibility and freedom really are the same thing. And then when it comes to purpose, it's so much easier to follow when you can make your own choices, when you can wake up in the morning and say, okay, this is how today's going to go. So by re-embracing my business experience, I ended up getting a ton of new training. Like, I invested probably $25,000 in myself at that point, just needed the input. I needed the education. I needed the coaching. I needed support, actually, because I was, even though I'd been a vice president in that marketing world, I was desperately needing somebody to have my back in that, you know, in that the coaching relationship is absolutely beautiful. I love it. It's so clean. You just pay somebody, as you know, right? You're coaching people. And then there's that exchange makes it so that somebody just unconditionally can have your back. And there's nothing like it when you're taking big risks in the world to have that feeling of somebody doing it. It's great if, you know, people just show up and do it, and mentors do show up, which is nice. But so then, you know, I stepped into being a coach myself and worked with primarily women for that next 10 years. And then it became very clear to me 2 years ago after working a lot with the masculine archetype. My dad died in 2015. So since then, I've really been healing the masculine side of myself that, again, I didn't realize was so, you know, I just pushed it apart from myself, demonized it. I can only admit now how much I really, truly hated men. I carried that. I tried to deny it to myself and everybody, but I was really clearly finding that. And, you know, the filter I'd seen men through was not good. I had equated the patriarchy and men with everything wrong in the world.
Hmm.
And it was just such an awakening to see that it was a big fat lie and that it was in me. Like, so happy that that's a lie. So happy. Because I could at least, you know, live some of my life without that illusion. But it was truly about the masculine and feminine archetype in myself that were out of alignment and that needed healing. So that's been the next leg of this journey now, has included this King Hero that I'm talking about, this archetype that is so badly needed in the world.
So there's a lot to unpack in there. There's so many things I was into, and so often when I'm listening to my guests talk about their lives and their passions and things, I'm a very visual person mentally. And the whole time you've been talking, I've essentially just been imagining fractals and thinking about how that is sort of a metaphor for the way that a soul comes into this world, because, you know, you have this Mandelbrot set of your soul, sort of, and it can iterate infinitely, but it can also be stymied. You know, like if you watch a fractal representation on video or something, you know, it just starts as this little thing, and then it just kind of spirals out, and it gets all trippy colors, and you go, "Holy shit, that's amazing! Whoa!" And I feel like this is important, but I couldn't explain how. But you can also press pause on that, and it just sits right where it's at. And you can kind of look at it and inspect it. But then after a while, it's like, there's nothing new here. And I think a lot of people experience that in their development of their soul. It's like, look, you've been given this thing. And you know, I like to frame it in terms of God, because that's the way of looking at the world that has brought me the most peace and happiness. And so even though I can't know, I choose to believe that, because when I have chosen to believe in that framework, I've had more richness and more blessing in my life than when I have chosen otherwise. But regardless of whatever it is, you know, you come into this world and you're a person and you have this essential you-ness, and it is a fractal thing because you have all these influences coming in and shifting your path, and it's choices, and it's also this great big tidal wave of momentum of all of history and all of culture and all of your family and everything that you're exposed to. And you sort of can choose like which bubble to ride on this big wave. But the reality is that a lot of the stuff that you're exposed to doesn't have anything to do with you. It's just where you're at, time and place and momentum. And you sort of, a lot of what you get to choose is how you feel about things. In fact, my grandma had this plaque in her house, and it said, "Work you must. Your free agency lies in whether you like it or not." And at first I thought that was just the dumbest shit. I was like, oh. And as I got older, you know, I realized why she felt that was important enough to hang up in her house, because you don't get a day off. I mean, even if you take a day off of your job or whatever, you still have the same 24 hours that you had in any other day. And that's sort of a relative thing too. But for the time that you're awake before you have to lay down and recharge, it's the same time that anybody else has. And you can make it into something worthwhile, or you can fritter it away and do whatever you're going to do. And sometimes the work is to fritter it away. Sometimes you just need a chance to say, I'm not going to, you know, I'm burnt out, I'm overloaded, I'm just going to do whatever it is that I do to waste time, because I need a little bit of time to waste so that I can let things coalesce in here. It's like a daydream, literally. You go to sleep and you recharge. Sometimes you got to recharge in your waking life, because it can be overwhelming. But, you know, you talked about a lot of things in there that are so interesting to me. And one of them is this idea that the way that you view the world, the way that you approach the world, has an impact on the energy that you interact with in the world. And I'm a big paradigmatic thinker, or, you know, like these levels of ascension, and they have these paradigms, and the gap or the the edge between two paradigms is a gatekeeper. And it's never a what, it's always a who, is a thing I learned from a guy named Kirk Duncan, who's like a motivational guy around here who I've been to a bunch of his stuff. And I really like that because, you know, let's say that you're moving along in life, and I like to think of it as like just stairs. You know, sometimes it's a straight up climb and it's really hard. And then you enter this new paradigm, and right at the top of the climb is when it's hardest. You know, you're like trying to pull yourself over the edge, and can I make it? You're shaking and things. You got to like let go of some weight on your back, and then you make it. And then it's just, and it's like, man, the world looks so awesome up here. And oh, I look back there, and hey, look at those little ants down. Oh, wait, no, that's my friend Bobby. Cool. But, you know, and then you kind of like, okay, well, I'm going to explore this area for a while, and I'm going to see what the world looks. And then you hit this wall. What's this wall? Oh, it's the next climb. Cool. Well, I hope I'm ready, because I gotta give it a go now. There's nowhere to go but up, or to fall again. And I have found in my own life that when I have been in alignment with my principles and I have been actively pursuing the things that I feel like are my purpose, that destiny is tapping me on the shoulder and saying, Chance, that way. And then I turn and look and I go, oh, that, okay, that's the thing. That's what I need to do. And I go for it. I have no limits on my energy. And for example, when I wrote my book Uncommon Mentality, I had committed to it, and writing another book called The Five Pillars of the Ascendant Mind, which I co-wrote with some friends of mine. And they were both sort of centered around establishing some tools and principles and practices that people could use to align themselves with their purpose and get their mind into it, get their body into it, get their philosophy into it, really set the bar high, and then take all those steps to get there. And I was sleeping 2, 3, 4 hours a night for months on end. And I would come home from work and I would sit down and I would write, and I would literally fall asleep at the keys, and I'd wake up and there'd be 100 J's on there. And I go, oh shit, I better erase all the save. And then I got to go to bed, and I set my timer 2:30 AM. What time is it now? It's midnight. 2:15, you know, and then I get up okay, I got to get some coffee, got to get some writing done. And then I'd write for 2 hours or something, and then I'd go to work, and then I finished it. And I thought, okay, now is the point where maturity is going to show up, because in the past, and I wasn't doing positive things, but I still had that kind of energy. Like, man, I'm going to drink so much tonight. I'm just going to drink the most I can drink, and I'm going to get high, and I'm going to take heroin, and it's going to be really awesome self-destruction. And I'm going to get up and do it again tomorrow with no sleep, because that's just, I'm extreme. But then I thought, okay, it's time to show a little maturity here. So I stepped back and I started sleeping 5 or 6 or 7 hours a night, and recharging and putting my body back together and putting the things that kind of fell into chaos while I was just avidly pursuing this one thing. But the point I'm trying to get at with that is that I have seen, and people have seen, because I shared my experiences all along the way on Twitter as I was writing this book. It's like, look, you guys, I slept 2 hours last night. You know how many hours I slept the night before? 3. You know how long it's been since I slept more than 5 hours? Months. Except for like one time on the weekend, because I couldn't wake up. Did I get sick at all? No, I did not. Did I feel burnt out at all? No, I did not. Did I keep exercising? Yes, I did. Did my body fall apart? No. But at other times in my life, if I'm sleeping 8 hours and I'm eating right and I'm have a job and my relationships are good, but I'm not pursuing anything that matters to me, oh, looks like Chance got a cold. Better hang out on the couch for 2 days because you're too sick to even get up. Why is that? Why is that? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Maybe it's because there's something else out of alignment besides those things I just listed. And I want you maybe to respond to this question. Why do you think it is that things like, say, food, activity level, career, these things are so widely recognized as critical and important to both health and psychology and these kinds of things, but things like purpose or alignment or archetypes are things that are sort of like, well, you know, that's kind of hippie bullshit. I'm over here worrying about money and you know, whatever kind of diet is the fad right now, and that's going to be the key to my destiny, which, don't get me wrong, those things are important, but why do you think it's so often that the sort of the true meaning of life kind of things are so haphazardly tossed out the window in favor of these other things that are sort of obtuse and hollow?
I could go right to a conspiracy kind of explanation for that, because it's very much more convenient for the powers that be to have a zombie population, right? And look at the superhuman power that you had when you're in your purpose, sleeping 2, 3, 4 hours per night, not getting sick, being like totally alive from the sounds of it, on fire. Like, people actually don't even have any clue about their capacity. And, you know, you don't have, if you're listening to this, you don't have to let it scare you that you're going to have to go through that 2 hours and 3 nights. And the journey is often like, there was, this summer has been like absolutely insane output. And I am recovering from a cold. So purpose hasn't stopped me from getting a cold every so often. But it still is allowing me to put out what other people, I know my son is daunted. I know when he watches what the level that I output, that would be very hard on him, because it's making him see that to, in order to be sovereign and self-employed, what it actually takes. And so it's, you know, it's easier to be a zombie, even though there's always a tipping point where somewhere along the line, the soul decides on freedom. And then freedom starts to pull you more than the lure of sleeping and the painkillers and the kind of anesthetic of just going through life somewhat dumbed down and not with your eyes open to what's happening, not feeling, not acknowledging the voices that are coming to you, through you, telling you how to be in alignment with your purpose, all of that kind of thing. So there's a lot invested. There's actually really a lot invested in keeping people asleep and not awake, because somebody like you is very hard to control.
Even for me.
right. That's it. You're not actually sitting there consuming media. You're creating. And that's the whole thing, that if you can, the purpose and being in that creative place, that's the whole thing, that it births your deep desire. It's not even a desire. You just, all of a sudden your body is going and you're doing something and you're just doing it. And you, it's almost like you can't stop it and you don't want to stop it. There's such a joy behind it, and a state of urgency too. It's like, I've always had this. It's always urgent. It's always urgent. And then it just makes worth, you know, it makes life worth living. That for me, the pain of being a zombie is much, much more excruciating than the pain of doing the work and struggling sometimes, because, you know, it's up and down. There's the journey. I won't pretend to anybody that it's just like, oh yeah, you get on your purpose and you're happy forever and no challenges come up and nothing ever goes wrong. Like, no, that would be really a bad lie. But it's the struggles and the challenges and the pain are all worth it. They're all meaningful. They're all directly on point. And when I get to the other side of them, it's always so clear to me why I had to go through that kind of a thing, compared to just like waking up out of a zombie thing. And it's just like, oh, need to go back to sleep, need more drugs, need more, you know, whatever to go up and out. So yeah. So I think there's a lot of gravity. There's a lot of support for people to be asleep. You know, if say you're, you know, a friend of mine's mom just died, and I know there's going to be people that say, well, why don't you just go on some medication to deal with that pain? But it's the worst thing you could ever do, is to stop the pain, because the pain is the very thing that is it's the grist for the mill. It's the thing the soul's going to use to get to a new place. Mm. You know, I lost both my parents, 2015, 2017, gone. And it really was and excruciating. Was one of the hardest things I've ever had to go through in my life, to lose the second parent, actually. And that pain for me, the ability to go into it rather than run away from it, birthed a whole new level of my life and my career and my self-understanding and my connection in the world. Sometimes I'm even wondering if my mom didn't pass away as a gift to. You know, or like, that's a weird way to say it. Like, but it was, I turned it into a gift, even if it wasn't anywhere of her soul's intention. But I wouldn't know what I know now. I couldn't walk in the world the way that I do if I haven't been through that and suffered that. And the fact is, it's not, the suffering isn't the point. It's not to stay suffering. It's to get to that other side where you can see that in fact, what pain is not really what we think it is. Like on the side when you're trying to avoid it, it looks like one thing, but at the other side, when you get through it, you look back and you go, okay, well, where is that pain? What was that?
So there's a useful metaphor that I often use when I'm talking about these things, because you can get pretty esoteric when you're talking about purpose and energy and archetypes and all these kinds of things. But I like to frame it in a thing that most people are very familiar with. And it's like, let's pretend that your life's purpose is a job. Okay, you go to your job. Happiness is like your payday, right? You get some money because you go to work. Okay, but what do you do with that money? It's not the point. The point of the job is not the money. The money comes to you and then you use it for the things that you are responsible for and that you want to seek after and for new experiences and all these kinds of things. It's like a, you know, it comes into your bank account and the sadness and the suffering and the pain. These are all like the tasks that you have to do in your job. You know, even if you love your job, there's some stuff that happens that you don't love, but it's a challenge and you overcome it and then you develop. And it's the same thing with your life and your purpose. It's like, okay, am I doing a good job? How would I know? Well, usually when you do a good job and in a system where people who you're working with or for people who have some sort of sense of responsibility to you because you have a sense of responsibility to them and there's a reciprocal relationship. You did an excellent job. You went above and beyond. Well, here's an extra reward. Here's a new opportunity. And like you said before, freedom and responsibility, they're just sort of flip sides of the same coin. You never get an opportunity, a new opportunity, an extra opportunity without an additional obligation or an additional responsibility. That's kind of the thing. And then you fulfill that responsibility and then you get the next opportunity. And it's another one of those paradigm things. The more your capacity to fulfill responsibility, the more opportunities you get, because people look at you and they say, Beth, you knocked that out of the park. Here's a thing that I didn't know where to take it, but I saw that you did an excellent job and here's the project. Can you do this? And you say, yeah, I can do that. And then you try your best. And if you succeed, you know, wow, Beth, you really did that. And I didn't know anybody who could do that. And now I know you can. So when I have a challenging project, I know who I'm going to come and pay the money to do this or pay the gratification or the satisfaction of having done this to you. And it's the same thing for yourself. And that's a useful way of thinking about it. It's like, if you want to be sovereign, then your job is you. If you want to be free, that's a job and it takes work every day, because slavery is very simple to fall into. If you're working for yourself and you take 2 weeks off to just fritter all the money you got and go do a bunch of cocaine and strippers or something, you know, it's like, well, you know, you just squandered all the stuff that you had. And now when you come back to your business, you're going to be burned out. Your chemistry is going to be whack. Your moral sensibilities are going to be shifted. And there's this responsibility that you're going to have to take for the shitty things that you did now. And that's the thing that I think holds a lot of people back. And I agree with you that there's a certain amount of engineering. I'm always talking about narrative. And it's like, why is this the narrative? Because all narrative is on purpose, especially at the mass media level. If you think that stuff isn't specifically designed to be doing what it's doing, then you're foolish, because they've been doing, you know, like what works and what doesn't, and they've got it honed to a science. And that's why I tend to avoid a lot of movies or even popular music or any of these kinds of things, because it's like, here's some shitty stuff to stuff in your brain so that you don't realize that you're like this infinitely powerful being of just like pure creative energy. Because how are we supposed to exploit you and steal your life energy if you realize that's what we're doing? And so I guess through that framework, I'm wondering from your perspective, what is there sort of like a common entrance into the world of making the realization of that sort of infinitely creative being inside of you that's just waiting to be let loose once you sort of clear that fog of nonsense that so intentionally thrust in front of your face to maybe like block your vision of the reality of your purpose and your essence? Is there sort of like a pretty standard entrance into that world, or do you think it's more of a case by case basis based maybe on the archetypes? And are there like maybe several ways to get in there depending on your composition?
Yeah, it's sort of both and everything in between. But the journey of life itself, this is one of the discoveries after my mom passed, that the journey of life itself is archetypal. So there is certain things that happen that one way or another, we are, offered our calling, or we are called is a maybe a better way to say that. And just give me 1 second, the video probably. Can you still see me? There we go. Sorry, I'm just getting a call. So yeah, the calling can come in a lot of different ways. It can be a breakdown, like me with my health. It can be, it doesn't have to be necessarily a negative thing, but just some sudden change that's asking something of you that, because that's for the most part, the calling is always a big surprise to the person being called. It's like, huh? You know, that's not what I had planned. And it's almost always that there's a reluctance, that there's like, no, that's not for me. I remember at one point drawing my archetype wheel up and seeing a deeper kind of purpose to my life. And I was daunted. I'm like, no way, man, you can't make me. This is too big. I can't do this. But even recently, right, in my own journey, I finally saw the journey. I finally saw how the archetypes that I had realized inside myself, that they were meaningful. They were a map. Before, it was just archetype soup for me. I don't know how I made it so many years with just archetype soup, but now it's so clearly a journey. I've been working for the last 2 years with people on this journey and proving that it works. It's a mythology that when they get inside, it's what John did with me, who you opened talking about, that when you work, it's working with nature. Archetypes is working with nature, following that journey. And having, you know, so the calling is going to come, and it's going to, one way or another, it's going to ask you to get out of your denial, and it's going to ask you to go into an experience that nobody wants called betrayal. Because coming out of denial is betrayal. When you allow yourself to wake up and see what's actually going on. Right. I was just listening to a terrible book. It was highly recommended to me, and it's like so painful to listen to it. I'm not sure if I can keep going, but it was describing this, I believe, a woman's experience. I don't even know if the author is a man or a woman, being raised by a very severely abusive, father. And they would get by, the family would get by every day by re-forgetting. That didn't happen. Oh, and that didn't happen. And that never happened. And we're not going to talk about that. And that didn't happen. The whole life was just one long string of having to literally go unconscious to pretend to themselves, to pretend to the community at large. You know, it was a very successful father, wealthy, established in the community. But this horror was going on behind the scenes in the home. And so this level of denial, it's kind of what we're doing here on the whole. There are, you know, there's a $1 trillion trafficking industry, and there's like, you know, children are being stolen. I can go on and on about all of the awful things, and it's not what's being publicized, the awful things. That's not really, you know, that's all the stuff they're trying to get us to look at.
Right.
But the real horror that's going on behind the scenes that they're trying to make sure we don't see, that's the part, it's actually in front of our eyes. It's hiding in plain sight. It can be seen if you have eyes to see it. And that was the big thing for me, to let myself look at that finally, to not run with my blinders on, to not look away from this immense suffering. I had real living, breathing people in my life that had been through stuff. I couldn't look away anymore. And then I allowed myself to go through that betrayal, and it woke me up. You know, I already thought I'd I've been in my purpose for many, many years already, and it unfolded and revealed another layer and level of it. So I took up the calling to a new level and layer. And that's ultimately how it works. That's there is one calling in life, but it's going to continuously, like you said, it's going to keep upping the ante. And it's going to bring us to new places that we didn't expect or want to go. And then, am I answering your question at all? Looks different for every person, whatever that is. It can be, I do believe that it doesn't have to be a knock 'em down cyclone, but it can be something that you do to yourself. Like wars and training, they put themselves in hardship. They do it to themselves. They put extra weight on them. They run with weights on, literally, so that when life calls them to something intense, they're ready for it. So the ability to look at your life, hear your story, listen to my story and say, oh yeah, it's kind of an inevitable thing that you're going to be betrayed by your life. You're going to be. And so what if you betray yourself? And you push yourself harder than you have to. And you take more responsibility than you're forced to. And you start championing for people, even though nobody's asking you to do that. You make your life mean something more, even though you can just easily be on social media and don't care about anything.
So it's interesting that you talked about putting weight on yourself, because there's a sort of metaphor that I use often, and it's the pit and it's chains. And what you sort of come to realize, and you know, for me, I'm a very stubborn person naturally, and I've mellowed out a little bit on that because I've been severely humbled in my life. But you know, it sort of took life, grabbed me by the head and just whack, 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 and then pulling up my head, you had enough? No, whack, whack, you had enough? No, until finally I just was like gurgling bubbles out of my mouth. And I was just like, okay. But you know, there I found myself at the bottom of this pit. And when you're down there, it's very easy to say there's no way out of here. I'm not even going to look up because I already know there's no way out of here. And I was deep in that pit, not as deep as it gets. It's bottomless until you die. And I almost died. But you know, the moral depravity that I embodied didn't go all the way down. Maybe like my ontological experience of life was pretty close to just ending, and maybe that's the limits of my soul and where I could get to before I died. Like you sort of had an experience with the cancer, and for me it was just self-destruction, literally self-destruction and destruction of the world. But at a certain point,
so was the cancer, by the way.
Yeah okay,
same thing,
exactly. I looked up and I said, there's a light up there. It's up there. All right. Oh man, these chains are heavy. And they don't seem to be that long. Like I'm trapped down here. Well, no, you're not. Your chains are as long as you make them be. But okay, I've got these chains and they're strapped to my back. All right. Well, I got to be stronger. And for me, it was literally, let's get stronger. Let's keep lifting weights. Let's dedicate myself to this. Let's take care of my body. That's where I had to start, because I was ill all through childhood. You know, I'm not a naturally healthy person. I just assumed the guise of a healthy person by learning what that took and by getting things right up here. It was like, okay, okay. Oh, the chains, but I made it to this plateau, kind of like we talked about. And I was like, how close? Man, it doesn't seem any closer. Okay. Okay. I need to take a breath. This is like, I can see down to where I was at. Kind of like I can see some murky shapes, but those are not my murky shapes anymore. And then eventually you make it out of the pit, and then you look at the world around you and you're like, well, I got these chains on my back, but man, after climbing out of that deep, dark pit, I feel like I could carry them forever. And maybe like, let's pull one up and see what happens. Oh, there's a person here. There's a person who's grabbing onto this chain because they saw me climb. You want to take my hand? Because I'm not going to do all the pulling. You know, I'll take your hand and I'll pull you up, but you got to put your feet against the wall and help me pull you, because it's not my life, it's yours. I'm willing to help, but I'm not willing to do everything for you. It would erase the meaning. And then you realize too, oh, well, turns out that this wall I've been climbing, well, as soon as you hit level ground, well, it turns into a ladder. And you sort of look up and you go, how far does that ladder go up? Well, I don't know, but I can't see the top of it, so let's figure this out. And then you climb step by step, rung by rung, and I still have those chains. You know, I still have the things that I did. That never goes away. I don't get to be the guy who didn't do the things I did. I get to be the guy who goes and continues to climb in spite of who I was and what I did. And, you know, people can grab onto my chains and they can try to pull me down, and they might pull me down a rung every once in a while, but they're not going to pull me all the way down because I'm too strong, because I made it. I made it out of there. The only person who can do that to me now is me, unless somebody literally just takes me out. You know, it's like, okay, you can't take me down. I've already been where you're at, dude. I see what you're doing, and it's not going to work on me because I already played that game. I made it out. Mm-hmm. And there's another experience that only allegedly has happened to me. Just to be clear, authority figures and three LAs, but there's this experience you have when you smoke DMT, and it's really wild. And what happens is you take these 2-3 big hits, as much as you can take in, of dimethyltryptamine, and this weird thing happens. You start seeing these patterns emerge all around you, and it's like this fabric of existence, and you start hearing this tone in your ears, and as it intensifies, the pitch goes higher and the patterns intensify, and then they start to before they were superimposed across your normal vision, and then your normal vision sort of like is superimposed across the patterns, and then the normal vision goes away and it's just the patterns and it's just the tone, and then it amplifies even further and it overwhelms all your sensory capability, and then you break out. And when you break out, you're free of physical constraints, you're free of any constraints of any psychological thing at all. You're just out in the infinite universe, and the thing will be like, I'm over here. And you go, oh, wow, look over there. There's an infinite wisdom and I can't even explain it. And look it over here. And oh, hey, now I'm walking in heaven and I don't even know what that means. And now God's talking to me and I'm looking at him and he's looking at me, but I don't even know what that means. And there's this amazing revelation after amazing revelation. And then, boom. Oh, whoa, what just happened? Let me, I don't have the words, but I saw a glimpse of heaven. I saw a glimpse of my purpose. I saw a glimpse of the infinite just complexity and beauty of the universe, and I've lost it all. Shit. Except I remember that I saw it. I remember I'm kind of beneath the veil of whatever the limitations of this existence are, but I saw it. I know it's there. I've had this experience now, and it's sort of the same in life. You know, you get a taste of your purpose, and when you taste it, sometimes it's so intense that it just totally rips you out of your entire frame, and you see what the world could be if you continue to just rock it out. And you used a metaphor close to the beginning of the conversation where you said, I broke that sound barrier. Mm-hmm. And one thing I wanted to ask you about that, and maybe because I just kind of went off on a tangent there because I felt compelled, but when you break through a sound barrier, there's a sonic boom. You know, and it kind of just like, and there's that pressure right here, you know, like, it's like, boom, and you make it through, and then it's a whole new thing. And I wonder, and then those sonic booms alert people to the fact that you just entered this whole new world, and they go, oh, wow, somebody just broke the sound barrier. That's amazing. And then it kind of washes over them and they're overwhelmed. Whoa, wow. I shouldn't have stood so close to that. And I guess for you, Maybe just, I don't know exactly what kind of question to ask, but I'm curious, maybe you could expand more deeply on that metaphor.
Yeah, it's interesting. It just happened to me this last weekend. I've spent the last couple of years praying for something in very particular, and I didn't know if I was ever going to see it in my lifetime, but I continue to pray for it and work for it, and it's really part of the journey. Is to see humanity return back to nature. That sounds like such a cliche, but I want to see what would human beings actually be like if they didn't have all the unnatural pressures on them, if we weren't being poisoned, if we weren't being, you know, oppressed and put down and enslaved and all, you know, blah blah blah, on and on it goes. I just want to see it because I don't know what that would be like. I don't know what my body would feel like. I don't know what my hormones would be like. I don't know what my relationships would be like. I just, there was such a hunger. It was so, I just, I just thought, okay, if I'm so fortunate, I will see this in my lifetime. And I've been working for it and praying for it. And then I had the good fortune of being part of the last 4 years, a festival here locally in Manitoba, the I Am Festival, it's called. And it's unlike some of the music festivals or DJ festivals or arts and, you know, festivals, this one is a transformation festival. And the whole purpose of it is healing and getting down and real with whatever it is, whatever kind of bottomless pit. And that pit is bottomless. There's no bottom if you don't say so. There's literally no end to the darkness. Unfortunately, that's the definition of hell right there. And so even having it come up, my soul knows. And it started to set up this really interesting thing. I didn't intend to talk about this, but I'm going to do it anyway. So I was sitting around with a really amazing, beautiful, longtime old friend of mine that just happened to be in town. And she's one of the few people on earth that I can say absolutely anything to. And she gets me, and, you know, she's all about personal development and healing. And so I was literally complaining about, and I think my sisters won't see this, so I can just tell you, I was complaining about an age-old wound with my sisters that kind of goes on and on. And every time I think I'm done with it, there it is again. And we're sitting there. So all of a sudden, we hear this crash, bang, boom, speaking of, you know, breaking the sound barrier. And a shelf came loose. We didn't really know what happened, but everything poured off a shelf. The top shelf of my bathroom. It was very high, and there was glass things on there, and the glass shattered, and it was just a big dramatic display. And we're like, huh? And we go running over to see it. And my friend goes all of a sudden, like, it's your mom, like this. And I'm going, and my whole body just was almost like on fire with this realization that it was my mom talking to me. And then, you know, started to cry, and this big thing started to happen. There was actually poison coming out through my eyes. It was burning my eyes so much I couldn't bear it. I had to go and wash my eyes out. That had never happened to me. It was like poison coming out of me. And we figured it out. A bolt did come loose on the thing. But in the meantime, it was this really clear message coming through and showing me, like, almost like I was on my deathbed again, showing me backwards in my life. The lights went on to something, a dynamic that has been part of me as long as I can remember, and a way that I have maintained my separateness from people and the world. But it gets played out with me and my sisters as if the drama is just between me and my sisters, but the drama is really between me and the whole fucking world. And all of a sudden, I saw what I'd never seen before in Technicolor. It was just this thing and this beast. I broke the sound barrier. I went through it. I passed to the other side of something that I was trying not to see. In that, you know, again, it's a new calling. I came out of denial. I let myself be betrayed by that. I suffered the pain of it. And so this is how I went into the weekend of the festival, was having had this new awakening about myself. And I was super raw, like super raw. And I actually was sick. I had this cold, not well. I could have easily just told them, like, actually, I'm not coming. That would have been very easy to do. But because I know from so much past experience to go through the sound barrier, not to think, oh, this is all wrong. Feeling terrible, all this tears, poison coming out of my eyes, being sick. So I know to go all the way through, and I let myself be part of it. And I was a presenter, I was giving workshops, and I was teaching and singing and everything like that. And at the very end of the festival, after I saw a whole bunch of people get up and just like literally report their come to Jesus moments, to speak with incredible authenticity, with huge sense of purpose, with such bravery, it was even beyond imagination that so many people could have breakthroughs like that. I also got up and spoke and gave testimony to my transformation that I'd been through, and then seeing this on the other side, the second time I'm telling this story today in an interview, actually, seeing the quality of people's consciousness after that, the openness, the fearlessness, everybody broke the sound barrier. They surprised themselves. They didn't expect to. Most people went into it afraid and feeling like they were the only one who was suffering this isolation and this sense of separateness and the pain that they'd been through. And then all of a sudden, we're in this context where people all are feeling so safe to be themselves, to be authentic, to expose the thing that they're going through. And it's like the sense that somebody has your back. Yeah. And I realized that here I was, what I'd prayed for, I was seeing it. I was seeing people in this natural context that wasn't just about the forest and this beautiful sky and this incredible piece of land we were on. It was when people were in their natural state, not scared to be seen anymore. And so it was a beautiful thing. And that's what going right through that explosion, that boom, letting things fall apart. You know, I've never cried so hard on the way home from that festival as I have my whole entire life. And it's starting a new life. So I don't know if that's quite exactly what you had in mind, but that's the, you know, that's the nature of it, that it promises devastation. The sound barrier always promises to kill you. Mm. It looks like death. It can feel like death. But on the other side, here I am, you know, alive and well. And more inspired than ever. So, sorry, you know, it's getting so dark.
Oh, no. Oh, no.
Turn around. Yeah. Face the light a bit here.
First of all, when the sound barrier was first broken, people thought it was impossible, that it would literally just shake apart the plane. And Jaeger's like, nah, I'll try it. Fuck it. Let's go. And sure enough, you know, pull back. No, I'm going to go. Boom. You made it. Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Look at that. Mm-hmm. Awesome. And there's a very specific experience that I can relate to that sort of falls in line with yours. And when you said I literally had poison coming out of my eyes, it immediately triggered this memory. Mm-hmm. I have a friend named Simon, and I haven't seen him in a number of years. He's a paranoid schizophrenic, and he fell off the path. And he would have these things happen where he would he would totally lose sense of connection with this reality. And he was telling me one time about this experience he had where he was not here for days, and he thought he was Jesus Christ. And he went down to this river, and by the river was this like Afro looking guy, like, you know, very black skin, big giant Afro. And Simon went down to the river to talk to this person, and the person revealed that he was Moses. And that Simon was Jesus Christ, and that Moses had some lessons to teach Jesus Christ because he was the forerunner of this sort of rule bringer. And that he was supposed to teach Jesus Christ how to free people from the concept of rules and instead trade them for principles, because rules are limitations on freedom and principles are the key to freedom. And that was the mistake that Moses had made. And it's like, well, that sounds about right, but you're not Jesus, bro. But Simon and I had this weird couple of years together because I was a disaster, and it was right as I was sort of reaching the culmination of my darkness, or maybe like the bottom of my darkness. And I'd been eating mushrooms, magic mushrooms, allegedly every day for weeks and like almost every day for months, and just only eating like rice and hot sauce packets from Del Taco that I stole. And I didn't, like, I felt compelled to eat them. I didn't really know why, and stuff would come up and I'd be like, no, I'm gonna go have an adventure in the mountains, or, you know, no, I'm just gonna sit here and trip out. And then finally I'd eaten a bunch of mushrooms and I had a super big tolerance, and Simon and I were driving, and finally I suddenly was like, dude, I feel so sick. You gotta pull over right now. I'm a Ralph in your car. And I got out and I got over to the side of the road. He's like, dude, you gotta get in the car. Cops are gonna come. You can't. And I'm sweating. and just like the foulest smelling sweat coming out of every pore in my body, and oily, and just vomit and heaving and just,
oh no, all
this stuff coming out of me. And I was like, dude, you're my friend. You just got to be here for me and accept what this is, because I can't stop this. It's just coming out of me. And it just, all this vileness that was within me. And then I finally felt like, okay, oh, I don't feel good, but I don't feel like I'm going to puke. Can we go back to your apartment? I went back there. I was like, dude, I feel so sick and I feel like I smell off. He's like, dude, you smell fucking disgusting. Go take a shower. Of course you can. I don't want you sitting on my shit. So I went and I took a shower, and then I got out and put my drawers back on, put my shorts back on, and just left my shirt off. And, you know, I was lifting at the time, and Simon comes in, and Simon used to juice in high school, and he was this big, huge, muscular guy with veins coming out of everything, veins coming out of his back and shit. And we're flexing. And he's like, look, dude, look. You know, you're like, you got a good frame there. You just got to put some muscle on. You got to stay steady. You got to eat right. You got to stop just like ruining yourself. I was like, yeah, you're right. I do, don't I? There's something within me here. Like, I have the skeleton of something great. I should probably pursue it. But I have never before, or really after in my life, experienced such a literal physical expression of this existential poison inside of me being just squeezed out. And it was shortly thereafter that the cops raided my apartment and put a gun to my head and broke apart all my shit, and lots of stuff happened. And then I was being followed by the cops, and I knew that because I was writing down license plates and then tracking who I was being followed by and setting them up, like calling on the phone, I'm going to go here, and then you want to meet me there, and then having the person in the back of my car that we borrowed from somebody else that they didn't know it was our car. And then lo and behold, one of the license plates, and oh, I'm just putting oil in this thing where there's nobody parked. There's nobody been here for an hour because we got here a half an hour early than the appointed time. And so it's like, okay, this shit's real. And that leads me into the thing I wanted to say, which is this. You know, you talked about before about sort of the carnival or the circus that's intentionally placed in front of our eyes so that we stop looking at the obvious things that are also in front of our eyes. You know, you can look at the media narrative, or you can look at the reality that it's designed to disguise. And here's the thing I want maybe for you to talk on. And I think this would be a good thing to, maybe this can be our last point and then we can start winding it up. But very easy to see monsters. Monsters are very obviously real. You know, you look in the news right now and you got guys like Epstein, or you got people who are literally fairy tale story monsters. It's like, I can't believe this. But it's like, well, you know, he's not the only one, right? There are really monsters out there. Mm-hmm. And I wrote a tweet the other day, and I was talking about the cult of Moloch. And it's like, this is a child sacrifice. This is really a child sacrifice cult. And one of the people who follows me, he said, do you think that's literally true? And I said, even if it isn't, it's becoming literally true. I mean, it's right there in front of you, man. People are sacrificing children. And for what? For power, for money, to fill the emptiness of their soul with something that's worthwhile, which is like the sanctity of childhood. That's very true. But the thing that people don't realize or don't want to admit or are afraid to look at is the opposite of that. Heroes are real. This archetype of the demon or the monster, it's obviously real. You can see it. There are mass murderers. There are pedophile rings. There are all this weird, dark, destructive stuff. Mm-hmm. So is the opposite true? You know, there really are heroes. There really is a path to be something magnificent and incredible and just so powerfully good that you're undeniable. And when people look at you, they go, this is a hero. And there are a few examples out there, but even so, people try to tear them down, or they try to look for the weakness. They never just accept, this is really an incredible person. And even if they do have some flaws, because of course they do their best every day to do incredible things. And they've been doing that for so long consistently that they've made it to hero status. You can do it. And you talked about the hero king, the king hero archetype. It's like, look, I'm a leader and I'm sitting here on the throne, and guess what my throne is all about? It's service to you, to help you become something closer to the very best version of yourself that you can imagine, and to help you imagine an even better version when you reach it. And I guess what I'm wondering from you is maybe, A, why do you think it's so hard for people to accept that heroes exist when it's so easy to accept that monsters exist? And then B, what do you think it is beyond just the narrative or beyond the stories out there in the ether, but what do you think it is within people that causes them to deny their capacity to be the hero?
Yeah, it's the same thing that's going on. It's it's again facing the real pain, facing the reality of the soul. It's the most frightening thing for some reason. The calling registers as death, and it is a death to some people. Now will argue about this, but it's a kind of ego death. It's like your idea about who you are has to die in order to embody greater and greater versions of yourself. I don't know. I spent a lot of time thinking about this, and really have come to the place of believing nothing. So I have very little authority in this area now. I can make lots of guesses. Like, you know, are we allowing as a species, are we allowing such immense darkness to play out just so that we could exercise it from within our own souls, as above, so below? If it's out there, it's in here. And or is it a mass experiment? We've been farmed. We are, like, truly as a species, highly victimized, so desperately out of our element, trying to take something awful and make good on it is also always a human possibility. At the end of the day, the work is still the same, whether you see that stuff or you make sense of that stuff or you don't. It's to do your work, to listen to the divine, and be right with God. That's the work. Sadly, I don't have answers about that. I did come to one really beautiful conclusion. It's like at some point, it's like, what the heck do they need us for? Right? If this evil thing is so, this machine is so powerful, what in God's name do they need us for? And it's because we're more powerful. That it has no original power. Which is the embodiment of death, the pit, the living pit, it can only feed off of. That's why it needs our children. It needs that which is close to God to consume and eat, and unfortunately, you know, not to grow and live on, but to just feed the death side of things. So people, you know, need to wake up and see how incredibly powerful they actually are, and to start, you know, and the only way that you actually see that is to turn around and start helping other people. Do what was hard for you. If I had someone like me in my world back in that day when I was fighting for my life, maybe it wouldn't be the 3-year knock 'em down awful experience that it was. Maybe I could have moved faster through it. And now, you know, you just, it's like you said, and you got your chains, but oh, look, somebody's trying to pull up. I'm gonna now turn my attention on helping them get up and out of the pit. And you actually, that's part, it's hardwired into the hero's journey that you don't actually get to be successful in the journey if you don't turn around and help people. It doesn't matter how many demons you slayed or how big a challenge you overcame. If you don't help people, your life is meaningless. That's the basis of it. So
there's a, you know, I really like scriptures, all of them. Mm. Everyone, all the traditions I've ever read through, there's so much value in there. Mm. But one sort of collection of words in particular is the book of Genesis. I find immensely valuable, especially when talking about things like this. And it's like, look, okay, so you have the water, and that's like the dissolute potential. And you have the Spirit of God. God is the Word is the God, and the Spirit of God is floating upon the surface of the water. It's just kind of like cruise. I'm like, here's the infinite potential, and here's the word that's going to bring something into existence out of that potential. And he brings up the firmament, and he separates the seas from the firmament, and now you have something real. But there's a very crucial point in there, which is that you have, you know, you have the spirit of God on the face of the water, and then you have the waters, and then you have the void, right? And you, and so you have these opposite ends. You have this spectrum. You have void, non-existence, uncreate. And then you have the word, which is the thing that brings things into existence out of the potential. And in between those two things is potential. And that's sort of what it means to have that ego death, is that parts of you that no longer serve you return to the sea of potential, and then you bring together a new level of firmament. And I would encourage people, if there are things inside of that book that will tell you that that's, there are levels to all of that. You know, there's firmament after firmament after firmament. There's more than one. There's more than one sea. But at the bottom of all of that is the void, and you can level up or down depending on what you're doing. And to kind of talk just a little bit about what you said there, you know, you said that there's not anything there without us in it. And that's the same as void. You know, there's nothing, if there's nothing to go down the drain, if there's nothing surrounding the drain doesn't exist. It's just that kind of tension, that opposition of existence. And if it weren't there, then all the rest of this stuff wouldn't be so rich. But when you give into it, it literally just sucks your soul into nothingness, and you can become nothing, but that's always a choice. And that's the beauty of being a human. We can choose to be like our creator, or we can choose to be uncreate. And not one of us chooses all the way into either of those things, at least not in this life, you know, because you die first. You can't dissolve your soul into nothingness, because your body will die before your soul will, is my belief. And you can't become all the way like a god is, because your body won't let you. You know, maybe you just ascend, maybe you're whatever's going on there. But the point is, I suppose, is just that this archetypal thinking, it's nothing new. It's the oldest kind of thinking. And it's and it's very clear to see once you kind of step back and you go, well, what kinds of people are there? Oh, there's kinds of people. I just said it. There are kinds of people. Interesting. There's a male and a female kind of people. There's a demon and a hero kind of people. There's a father and a mother. There's a sister and a brother. Well, those are archetypes, and they manifest concretely into reality because you embody them. And you can destroy all those things too. You don't want to be a father. There's a lot of ways to not be a father. And you might have given, you know, your seed might have created a person, but that doesn't make you a father. That means that you have offspring. So I suppose I just want to leave people to think about that. And while they do, I want to kind of break the fourth wall here, like we talked about, and as is my tradition, because this has been a very powerful conversation, Beth, and I really enjoyed it, because a lot of the things that you talk about, I feel strongly, because I've experienced a lot of the same steps in different ways. And you're ahead of me on this journey of learning how to take my lessons and then give them to other people in a way that will help them along in their journey. But I have that desire within me too. And we've talked about your journey and some of the lessons you've learned and how you've gotten to where you've gotten, and why you have the desire to help people and some of the ways that you are helping them. And let's say that somebody is listening to this, which they will, and we've had our conversation, but you know, I like to give something directly to the listeners. And let's say that one of them sitting in front of you, whoever it is in your head, if you have a picture of somebody, and they say, Beth, I really enjoyed that conversation you had with Chance, and I really identify with a lot of things you talk about. They resonate within me. They spoke to me, and I do feel some sort of tug, or like calling at my heartstrings and my soul to go in this direction, but I don't know what it means. I don't know how to clarify this message. I don't know how to really start pursuing that call, that compulsion, whatever it is that's pulling me here. If that person was sitting in front of you and they said, Beth, what are the one or two things I could do today, starting right now, starting as soon as I walk away from this conversation, that I could just go do right now that would set me up for the most amount of success with the most efficiency of my time and effort, that, you know, so I could have a little faith that I could continue this progress? What are those one or two things I could do to start right now that would help me the most? And if they asked you that, what would you tell them?
I would say, look at whatever is the biggest pain in your ass in your life right now, and that has consistently been a pain. And the thing that you're trying to get rid of, that you're trying to stop, that you think you shouldn't be part of, and that it's a big mistake. And look at it in the context of that situation or that person or that thing that's the pain in your butt. See it as that it's there for one reason only, and it's there for your freedom. And how could you interact with it? Or how would you interact with it differently if you knew it was your exact path to freedom? Because your obstacles aren't actually in your way. They are the way.
The problem is the solution.
Exactly. So if you just take that one step of not being in resistance to it. Now, you know, like let's use an extreme example that somebody say is in an abusive situation. It doesn't mean that you stay in that abusive situation. It means that if you let go of your resistance to accepting that this is freedom on your path, then you will stay in that situation. That's the problem. It perpetuates it. Resistance, what you resist persists. And so, you know, giving yourself the, not just permission, but saying, okay, the work here is inward. Now, you know, with the men that I work with, it tends to be, it's the inward journey is the hardest, to look within, to feel those feelings and see, because there's a lot of messes that get made in life and they don't get cleaned up and they don't clean themselves up. It's like we both talked about poison coming out of ourselves until you're brave enough. You know, men tend to have a really powerful outward ability to go conquer the world. But when it comes to facing the traumas that everybody's been through, unfortunately, even the most normal life's traumatic in this weird ass world that we live in. So, you know, to really get powerful, get your warrior on, get resolved to that you're going to deal with it one way or another, get help. You know, I know it's a little bit self-serving to say it, but like find somebody, talk. If you can relate to Chance, go and talk to Chance. If you can relate to somebody else, go and talk to them. You know, you don't have to do it alone. It can be extremely daunting work. You're ultimately going to be facing your mortality. You're going to face your death. You're going to feel like you're dying. And you need to gain that power in yourself, that confidence that you can go through those things and come out the other side and prove to yourself that it's a big lie, that it's, you know, it's not what it, nothing is what it appears to be. Even the most difficult experience is not what you think it is. So that's a good start. You know, let somebody who's gone there guide you. You don't need to reinvent the wheel on everything. That's one of the gifts of being human, that we don't need to make every single mistake ourselves. Someone can be there for you at different stages of your journey. It may very well be different people that you need to bring into your world. And you know, above all, see your source, see where you come from, see your creator. Turn to your creator, because that's where you get the most support of all. The guidance will come and be there for you. There is peace to be found, even in the worst circumstances, even in the most intense pain and suffering. If you turn your eyes to God, then God is there for you 100%. And you don't have to suffer nearly as much as you might think that you do. So that's more than one thing, gents.
You know, the way that I frame that question is just, sometimes people don't feel like they have more than one thing they can offer. And that's the case with you. And that's perfectly fine. And that's a beautiful answer. Mm-hmm.
Also, I just have to say, you know, explore the world of archetypes, play with it. It's for some reason, it's so much fun to find your own inner archetypes, to see how are you wired. There's wiring, there's order in the court. It's not just chaos. Yes, there's chaos. There's the masculine and the feminine. There's the order. You can turn to it and see your blueprint. You can see all of this work that's come before us. There's a certain beauty in it. Now I have a map, right? This is the book that I'm writing. It's a map of consciousness, a map of archetypes to find the lost purpose that is always there waiting for you. It never dies or goes away. Maybe it does die, but it has to be very severe and extreme and far gone. Your body, like you said, your soul tends to outlive your body. And so use the knowledge that's come before you. And once you tap in with the archetypes, you gain a whole body of knowledge it's like inheriting something that you might have had no clue about, and you can gain great wisdom in with a lot of speed. And let go of your shit. That's it, right? That's what the archetypes are going to show you, where you're stuck, and then where your work is. Okay, now I'm done.
So I wrote a book, like I talked about before, and it's the culmination of basically 20 years. It's a culmination of 10 years of fuckery, and it's a culmination of 10 years of hard work. Pulling myself out of the consequences of that, or sort of through the consequences of that, and rebuilding myself into a person I wanted to be. And you just talked about your book, and I know we're kind of closing into the end of the conversation, but I want to understand a little bit better about what it is that you're putting together. Because it sounds like, you know, you talked about this is like a 20 year process for me. I had cancer 20 years ago or something like that. And since then I've gone through all these journeys, and now I'm putting all my lessons into this book. So why don't you tell us a little bit more about that before we, lose the chance to do that.
For sure. Yeah. It is the culmination of my life and the work. I couldn't have written it a moment sooner, as much as I kept thinking I should be writing. But now I feel like I truly have something to offer. It is about that archetypal journey of being valued for purpose and surviving purpose, because it is a kind of treacherous path, especially for men. So one of the things that the journey is there, that I discovered this along the way. I didn't even plan this to be part of the book, but it occurred to me how I was, you know, I spent a decade working with women, and now I'm very much working with men in a very different way. It's totally different. The kind of work that I do for women, it's almost like night and day. The things that men are good at, women can't do, and vice versa. The things that come very easily to women, men are struggling to do. And so the book became like the strands of DNA woven together, showing men to women and showing women to men, so they can see that actually they're not on opposite sides of the team. They don't oppose each other. They are two sides of the very same whole. And in working together, they can birth something utterly new, become very powerful as creators, both within themselves and then between the genders. It's really about putting an end to the gender wars so that humanity has the best chance at surviving, to not just so the human species can go on. It's so that the soul can live. It's about fighting for your soul. That's the real thing at stake. It's a war on the soul. So the book gives you an opportunity to travel this map of recovering your soul through purpose, through meaning, in a way that, again, is so much faster. When you've got a map, you're not just like shooting in every direction going blind. You can follow along something that's pre-writ, that's natural, that's already in the order that God has designed. All you have to do is work with it instead of against it, and things can go much more beautifully. Not necessarily easy, but beautifully.
You know, that's beautiful. And I really like the way you framed it, because there is a tension between the genders right now, and the solution for some people seems to just destroy all of it, just tear it all down and pretend that none of it exists in the first place. And then the solution for other people seems to just like draw my camp over here and let you draw your camp over there. And we'll just launch artillery at each other and never sort of have any sort of reconciliation. And I like that there are people like you who are trying to bridge the gap and say, no, no, there's a path forward together. You know, you can meet and then you can move forward. But if you never do that, then you're sort of out of balance all the time. You're falling over because mm-hmm. you don't have support of the things that you don't have a comprehension of. So that is wonderful. And how far along are you?
I've actually just finished the first draft. So I'm in the process of now editing, and I'm already selling the book. So I've got a handful of people who've taken a chance that it's going to be out. I'm not even guessing about the amount of time it's going to take me. I've got a coach right now that says it's probably going to be about 6 weeks. And that would be amazing if it was just 6 weeks or less even till I begin to publish and print the book. And but in the meantime, if anybody wants to jump in, you want to take a chance and be part of this, because I know that the conversation for those that are getting in on it early, I'm creating, for example, if you just want to invest, it'll still be the same investment, $20 to buy the book. But if you get in on it now, I'm opening up an archetype study group. So every couple of weeks, we're going to get together on a Zoom call like this and work through whatever shadows people are brave enough to bring to the call, and talk about the archetypes and have breakthroughs together, create community around it, discuss the important things in life, what is stopping you from fulfilling on your agreement with yourself about being on this planet in the first place. And so that's available, something that you can do. Just go to my website, and I believe the tab is going to say buy best book.
Okay.
So you can be part of that.
So let's say that people are interested in finding more out about you or finding more from you. Where can they find you? What's your website? What are your social media? What are the things that you want to point them towards so that they can have more Beth in their life?
Thank you very much, Chance. Yeah. In addition to the book that I'm writing, I have several coaching programs and ways to work with me, with the archetypes, with release process, with if it's building a business out of your life purpose, I can help you do that. If it's just surviving your life purpose business, I can help you do that. You can find me at bethmartins.com. That's the all roads lead to that realm. There's a King Hero archetype quiz. So if you want to find out where on this journey you're at right now, so you can gain some insight about how to have a breakthrough with the challenges and reclaim some of that energy you're losing, you can take a 7-minute quiz and just learn where you are on the journey. There's also one for women. I call it the Merpreneur's journey. That's a whole sort of topic of its own. It's the mermaid's journey. And same thing, just find out where you are, locate yourself on that map. And then I believe that's all of the stories. Oh yeah, social media. You can pretty much find me anywhere, like on Twitter at Beth Martins. Facebook is, if you just search up Beth Martins, the Martins is spelled Martens. That's where I've got the most of my engagement. I'm pretty new to really participating in Twitter. The Ionosphere is a big part of what you're part of. That is my biggest connection right now on Twitter, which is really a gift. I'm on Instagram, Beth.Martins, I believe. And I love to engage with people. I love to be in conversation, but anything meaningful, it's such a beautiful way to stay connected. If we can't be face to face, then we can certainly connect and use the tools. You know, that these things are actually meant to take us down, but we can use them for good. And to and do this kind of thing that we're doing right now and make it powerful. So yeah, absolutely come and engage with me. I'd love to hear from you.
Very good. I have maybe just one more thing before we can call it a night, and it's this, and you're the sixth person I've tried this new experiment on, and so here it goes. What is one question that you think people should ask of other people, and what is one question that you think people should ask of themselves?
Good ones. So one question that they should ask of other people. I think the question should always be something about, because it's people are powerful mirrors. What do you see in me? What do you think I'm stuck on? That'd be the most powerful question. It's amazing when you get that answer. Or, you know, what do you think I'm gifted at? That's you always get surprising answers to that one too. So both are good ones. And then the question that we should ask ourselves.
Yep.
The question you should ask yourself is, who am I? What's looking for me?
What's looking for me? That sent the wheel spinning.
Yeah, that's actually quoting. I just have to shout out to Dr. Jacob Lieberman, who taught me to ask that question. What's looking for me? It's a very beautiful way to navigate in life. Rather than, because we're always looking for something, we're searching and we're trying to, you know, grasping and trying to get something. It's like, well, no, what's looking for me? That's a much more beautiful, relaxed way to operate in the world. But it's a tall calling, because what's looking for you, you might be trying not to be found by that.
And hey, it's not always good things that are looking for you.
That's the thing. And it's often a feeling you don't want to feel that's looking for you. And it's thought that you don't want to admit you're having that's looking for you. And so, yeah, it's a tall order. It's a big life.
Those are two good questions there, Beth. I appreciate that. So look, we've had quite a journey here. And to be honest, there's some things that you sort of planted seeds inside of me. I'm going to have to do some writing about some of the things I saw inside of my head while we had this conversation. So I'm looking forward to that. But beyond that, you know, I just really want to thank you for taking the time to come on the podcast and to share some of your thoughts and your experience and your wisdom with me and with the audience. And, you know, there's a lot in this conversation. I just know that there's a lot of things in the conversation that are going to help the people who listen to it, as long as they have eyes to see it, as long as they have ears to hear it, as long as they have a string to be plucked so they can resonate and harmonize with the tune. But beyond that, look, if you're good, I think I'm good.
Nice. Super grateful for you. Have a lot of respect for the work that you're doing. And thank you so much for having me.
It's been my pleasure. And in that case, ladies and gentlemen, this has been this has been the Logo Centrifugal Podcast. I've been Chance Lunsford. She's been Beth Martins. And this is all, especially a couple of those references to psychedelic chemicals, been allegedly. We are out.
We here at the Logo Centrifugal Podcast work hard to bring you the highest quality audio, the best editing, and the most professionalism of any podcast on the market. Either that or we do the exact opposite. Either way, consider supporting the podcast. If you'd like to support the podcast, you can support the podcast by supporting the podcast. There's a link somewhere, and I encourage you to click the link to support the podcast professionally.